While discussions broke out on Uncle's organ removal theory, I sketched the anatomical figures he'd hastily drawn on the chalkboard at the start of our lesson in order to clear my mind. Dissected pigs, frogs, rats, and even more disturbing things such as human intestines and hearts adorned the inside of my pages. My notebook was filled with images of things a lady had no business being fascinated by, yet I couldn't control my curiosity. A shadow fell across my notebook, and somehow I knew it was Thomas before he opened his mouth. "You ought to put the shadow on the left side of the body, else it looks like a pool of blood." Deciding one should never show a mad dog fear, I met Thomas's sharp gaze full on. A small smile played on his lips, and my heart tottered in my chest like a carriage horse running through Trafalgar Square. I reminded myself he was a self-important arse and decided the stutter in my heart was strictly due to nerves. I'd rather bathe in formaldehyde than be ousted from class by such a maddening boy, handsome though he might be. That's a quote from Stalking Jack the Ripper by Carrie Maniscalco. This is YA Book Chat, and I'm your host, Leah Stuhler.
Hi, I'm Michael.
I'm Barbara.
And I'm Lauren.
We are the hosts of Badass Literature Society, a book review podcast where we take book recommendations from listeners like you, read them, and then discuss them on our show.
Join us once a month as we dive into the books you picked and talk about them.
And don't miss our bonus episodes covering all sorts of random bookish topics that come out in between reviews.
Don't worry, if you want to read one of the books, the first part of each episode is designated spoiler-free, so you can listen and see if you'd like to read it, and then come back and listen to the rest later.
You can find Badass Literature Society on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Amazon Podcasts, and anywhere else you like to listen.
Now, back to the show.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of YA Book Chat. Thank you so much for listening and being here. And I would like to say a special thank you to all my patrons. I appreciate you, and I could not do this without you guys. You keep me going. And speaking of which, one of my patrons is actually my guest today, which is super fun. We are going to be talking about Stalking Jack the Ripper by Carrie Maniscalco. And I hope I said that right, Carrie. I'm sorry if I didn't. And so my guest today is Sarah, and she is one of my patrons, and I'm so excited to have her here. Welcome, Sarah.
Hi, everybody. I'm so excited. This is going to be fun.
It is going to be fun.
Last name better than I would have, so.
Well, that's debatable, but we'll see. Well, Sarah, before we get started talking about the book, why don't you tell everybody a little about yourself?
So I live in Oklahoma. I work with college students. I'm an academic advisor. So my entire life is helping students be successful. And outside of work, I just engage in a lot of different creative endeavors, and I read a lot. YA is probably 75 to 80% of what I read. And so finding this podcast was fortuitous because you cover a lot of the books that I wish I could read, but I just don't have time for. And so some of them I'll listen to like just the spoiler-free section.
Yeah.
I'm like, great. Now I like am ready to read this book. And other times I'm like, I'm realistically never going to actually read this book. Listen to the whole thing and be like, okay, now I know what it's about. Awesome.
Well, that's good. I'm glad I can be of service for you in that way. Yes. It's just, it is so hard because there are so many books and there's just not enough time to read them all.
And not enough space. I'm a person who likes to own the books that I read too. Mm-hmm. I'm a book rereader as well. Like I will read things over and over again. And so it's a very expensive habit to have if you are someone who wants to buy them.
Yes, I understand that as well. Especially if you are also someone who likes to have, you know, books in a series all match, like I'll be hardcover or paperback, but somebody gives you one that isn't what you already have. So then you have to buy another one. I mean, just gets pricier.
It does. And then book publishers, it's like they don't know who we are because they publish books and they don't match.
Or you buy the books in one format and then they decide to re-release them with new covers in the other form. And you're like, well, now I have to buy the ones with the new covers because those covers are better than the ones that I have.
You know? Yes. One of my favorite authors, she had a book series and she published the first one and then she published the second one and the covers sort of matched, but didn't really. And then she published the third one, which matched the second one and really didn't match the first one. So her publisher is re-releasing a hardcover of the first one that matches. And thank you. You know who we are as readers.
Yes.
Of our beings.
It's satisfying now. It feels good to be seen. Now, I will say this for everybody listening. So Sarah and I are recording this the week where everybody, except for, I heard this on the news today. So I live in South Carolina, which is apparently one of the only three states in the entire country that does not have a load of snow right now. So I'm happy about this. Sarah yes. is in one of the states that is filled with snow and happens to also be living in an area where Zachary Levi is filming a movie. And Sarah and I were discussing pre-recording that I thought that she should go and rescue him from his hotel and, you know, give him a nice place to stay, a home-cooked meal. I mean, I'm sure Zachary could use that right about now.
I mean, he can come and stay in my guest bedroom. Our dogs stay. And I mean, if he never leaves, I'm not going to complain about it.
I mean, who would?
I'm sure he would love a life in small town Oklahoma.
You know, you just never know. You just never know.
Never do.
I mean, Bill Murray lives in Charleston. Now, that's not super small town Oklahoma, but it's not like Hollywood either. So,
yes. You could not pay me enough to live in Southern California. Honestly.
Oh, gosh, me either. No way. No, thank you. Sorry to those of you who are listening who live there.
It is probably a beautiful place to live. And I was born in Southern California, but it's really, really expensive.
Yes. And fires, mudslides, lots of things, you know, earthquakes.
Yes. Which Oklahoma has earthquakes and snowstorms and tornadoes. And ice storms and a few different things. So,
yeah.
See, other day in the giant snow. So it's been so cold, wind chills like negative 22.
I grew up in Western New York State. And then I lived in Chicago for 11 years. So I've had my fair share of the snow and the cold and the ice. So I am just have just moved beyond it and I'm in my happy place right now. So, all right. Anyways, I just thought all of you should know that Zachary Levi was in a snowstorm and trapped in Sarah's town right now. And that I told her that she should go kidnap him. But anyway.
I have been told by several people that I need to go, quote, rescue him, unquote, from his isolation.
You know what? So. And if you guys are listening to this and you are like, who is Zachary Levi? First of all, oh man. Second of all, look him up. You will not regret this. And then look up a video on YouTube of him singing. Then you'll really understand.
Yes. Yes. If you have Amazon Prime, you can get your Broadway HD subscription and you can watch him in She Loves Me and it will be one of the most treasured experiences of your life because it's funny.
I am doing that. Okay. Anyways, so we are going to cover a book today, everybody.
That is why we're here.
Mm-hmm. All right. So I am really excited about this book, Stalking Jack the Ripper. I kept on seeing this around. And so I really was wanting to read it for a long time. I am excited also because I don't know why, but you know, there are just certain things in history that we sometimes get obsessed with. And Jack the Ripper has always just been a very fascinating story. And then my husband and I watched a British TV show on Netflix called Ripper Street, which takes place in Whitechapel. But it takes place like just after Jack the Ripper has left England, but it's in his same district where he was. It follows the police detective who was working on the Jack the Ripper case, but then never solved it. So it takes place after that. And so anyway, so that that was really fun to watch. And then after I watched that is when I read this book and was so I just fell in love with it. So I'm very excited. So let me give everybody a quick plot overview. And just to refresh everybody's memories, like always, the first 15 minutes or so will be spoiler free. And then I'll let you guys know when I'm going to head into spoilers. All right. So this takes place in Whitechapel, which is pretty much London, England, 1888. And our main character is Audrey Rose. And Audrey Rose is not like other girls her age. Instead of doing needlepoint, gossiping, attending high tea with other girls, and thinking about marriage, Audrey Rose would rather be in her uncle's lab cutting open cadavers and studying organs. So when Jack the Ripper shows up in Whitechapel and starts murdering women, Audrey Rose can't help but get involved in the investigation. He murders women in cold blood. He terrorizes the entire city and he taunts those who hunt him down. But despite all of that, Audrey Rose is the girl who loved Jack the Ripper. So that is really, that description is really what pulled me in when it says that she loved Jack the Ripper. I was like, ooh, is this a woman who falls in love with Jack the Ripper? Like, this sounds really mysterious and exciting, and I have to know more about this. So that really drew me in. But let's go over some of our like kind of overall thoughts and impressions of the book. Sarah, I'm going to let you go first.
So I picked up this book, it feels like forever ago, because I saw the hardcover of the second book in this series. And I was like, ooh, that looks really good. Cause the covers for this whole series are fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was the hardcover for the first or second book in the series. And I was like, well, I can't like buy the third book. I have to buy the first book and then, you know. And then I started it and I didn't keep reading it. And then a long time went by and I was like, I need to read this book, because every time I was like, should I just get rid of it? I would read the premise again and I'd be like, no, that actually sounds really good. So I tried it again and it didn't grab me the second time either. And I'm not going to lie. Like, in preparation for recording this podcast, I had a false start again.
Oh, and man.
Sarah, you are recording this in 3 weeks. You have to read it. And I finally got far enough that it just gripped me and I couldn't put it down.
Sometimes it just takes a little while to get into a book, you know, like,
yes,
it just, yeah. Cause like, even, when I read Red Rising by Pierce Brown, it took me a little while to really get into the first book. But then once I did, I enjoyed it. And then like the rest of the books in that series, I just whipped through really fast because they're even better than the first one. So yeah, sometimes it just takes a little while before it hooks you.
The other thing that was hard for me, I do not love reading books that are present tense first person. They're my favorite point of view to read.
Yeah.
And so I, especially if I'm reading other books and I'm jumping into a present tense first person point of view, it takes me a bit to get used to it and to do it again. What I almost need to do is like all the books in my to be read, figure out which ones are present tense first person and read all of them at once so that like I'm in that mindset.
That's a good idea, actually. Then you can like have it all at once and you're prepped mentally and you can do it.
Yes. And I'm thinking in that way.
Yeah.
But the premise is just fantastic. This idea that there's this woman who is helping to find Jack the Ripper or involved in Jack the Ripper somehow.
Mm-hmm.
When you read the summary, you're like, okay, so she wants to be a doctor or a, like, you don't really know how it is that she wants to be involved. And of course it brings in a lot of gender dynamics from the late 1800s, which I enjoyed, you know, like she wants to be a doctor. She wants to solve crimes.
Yeah.
They won't even let her go to school because she's a woman. And so she just has to work alongside her uncle. And I'm not gonna lie, it was gross. There are gross things.
Yes, there are.
Which was part of why I had several false starts. It is very much a gothic style novel. Like very Frankenstein, very Dracula, very dark, very bloody, you know, and that's what it's supposed to be.
Right.
Not lying about that. That's what it is.
No, I mean, here. Okay. So here's what I want to know. Does your version have any pictures in it?
Yes, it does. And okay. They are gruesome.
Yeah. Because so if you guys haven't read this book, some of the pictures, there's not a lot, but there are a few pictures, and they're like pictures from the original Jack the Ripper case. So they're gross. They're gross. very vivid. Like I was like, ooh. I mean, and here's the thing. Okay. Here's how you know. First, one way that you know, kind of this is going to be like this is because this book is, I guess I should say presented by James Patterson. And James Patterson himself does, you know, kind of dark, mysterious type stuff. But then here is the first sentence of the book. I placed my thumb and forefinger on the icy flesh, spreading it taut above the breastbone as Uncle had showed me. So, so you know, right away, like you're starting with somebody cutting a body open.
Yes.
So it's just, and then, you know, of course, in mine on that first page is a picture of somebody performing an autopsy. So, yeah.
It was also very vividly described. Which yes. Harder, but at the same time, like speaks to Carrie Maniscalco.
It's okay.
Carrie, I'm gonna be presumptuous and just refer to her by her first name. Like it speaks to her ability as an author to just draw you in and really make you feel like you were there. I just had to get involved enough that I wanted to be there.
Right. That you want.
This is gross. And I think it smells funny.
Mm-hmm. Well, and here.
Much felt like you were there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, because she describes the scents too. And yes. So not just what things look like, but you really get a full feel and a full sense of it. And then, like I said, when I started reading this, I had just come off of watching the Ripper Street show on Netflix, which is, you know, shows this can be gross. Like when the doctor is dissecting, doing the autopsies, you know, there's some vivid stuff there too. So I'm like, okay, I have that imagery in my head as I'm reading this, plus her very descriptive imagery.
Yes.
But
like there's one moment early in the book when Audrey Rose is doing an autopsy and like they haven't spread enough sawdust on the floor to absorb the blood. Like, she steps in it and she talks about how her like slippers are covered in blood and they're ruined now. I'm like, oh, that's so gross.
Yep. Yep. She's just like, whatever.
That does bring up a very interesting aspect of this book that I really enjoyed throughout the whole thing is you get a very in-depth picture into 1880s like medical techniques and technology and different things. I almost had to remind myself that this was not a fantasy, that like it was a real story and a real, I kept waiting for like it to be someone who is undead.
Right.
You know, like I kept waiting for vampires or zombies or magic or demons or something because it almost felt unreal.
Right. It did.
But it was science that existed in early science when people didn't believe it. Like people think her uncle, who is a, you know, very well-known forensic specialist who helped Scotland Yard solve crimes, people think he's crazy and he's weird and that what he's doing is just creepy. Whereas now it's like, it's just science.
Right. Yeah. But then they were like, we don't know what you're doing. We think that you're really weird, you know?
Yes.
But
which, I mean, he did keep dead bodies in his basement because that's where his laboratory was. So
yeah,
he was not weird.
Right. He did have his weird qualities about him, but you know, that's what made him so lovable. That's why Audrey Rose loved him at any rate.
Yes, but his brother, Audrey Rose's father, did not love him.
No, no.
And you get that pretty early on in the book, is that their family has some very interesting dynamics that they explore throughout the book that is also very interesting.
Yes, they definitely, and we'll get into more of that when we go into spoilers, but yeah, there are some very interesting family dynamics happening in this book. There are just some fun relationships too. Like, I really love the relationship between Audrey Rose and Thomas. They just have the best banter between them. Their conversation is fantastic. It's just fun. I just really enjoyed exploring that and watching that relationship kind of develop too. I also just loved that. So the author, she wrote at the back of the book what she took from the actual story of Jack the Ripper, you know, the true story, and then what she kind of fictionalized. So, you know, which I thought was really great that she put that information in the back of the book, because I mean, obviously there are some things that we know that were true, but I don't know like all the details, you know? So it was, I found it very helpful, but I like that she did that and it wasn't like completely 100%, you know, accurate, and that she fictionalized some things and changed a few things here and there. And so I don't know, again, this is, Jack the Ripper is one of those spots where I've always been kind of fascinated by. So I like that she does that.
One of the pictures that they use in the book is a picture of like an actual Jack the Ripper letter, which was surreal. Mm-hmm. I was like, wow, that's weird.
I know. That's Jack the Ripper's handwriting. He wrote that. Like, yeah.
It's really one cool. of the greatest unsolved mysteries like in history.
I know, right?
Was Jack the Ripper? Like, what's the story there? Like, what's the truth there?
I know. And we have no clue. We have no clue for real. You know, she has her own response in the book, but for real, we don't know. I will say, I agree with you on Audrey Rose. I love that she is a character who defies society's norms for girls and women. It's just, when you think about, you know, the 1800s, the late 1800s in this case, and how women were looked at, and, you know, well, you can't do this or you can't do that, and you're supposed to only think about getting married and go to tea parties and gossip and all these things, like, and wear dresses and skirts. And she is so the opposite of that. You know, she wants to break out. And I absolutely love that. There's a quote that I wanted to read. It's not spoiler. It's not a spoiler, but it just shows how it is. Because she says, "In my spare time, I flay open bodies of the deceased, two of whom were victims of Leather Apron. The scent that hung in the room would drop a man to his knees, and I aided my uncle during the postmortems while standing in gelled blood. I sat back in my chair, the leather squeaking its own disapproval. Whatever you have to show us won't be too much for my stomach to handle, I assure you." So she's like seeing this like horrid scene with these dead bodies, the like coagulating blood on the floor. And she's like, "Eh, whatever, this is old hat for me." You know, but there are men there who are screaming and squirming and passing out and like wanting to vomit. And so it's just one of the ways that she defies society. She does it too with the way that she dresses and the way that she acts. Mm-hmm. And she wants to take her uncle, because her uncle is a professor too. Like, he's a scientist, but he teaches a class about like a human anatomy class. And she wants to take his class, but it's at an all boys college. So she, you know, she just kind of breaks the rules in all the ways. And I absolutely love that.
Yes. I also love that she struggles with that. Mm-hmm. Like, one of the things that bothers me when people are writing fiction that takes place in history, when you have women who have deeply modern thoughts and there's no struggle there, I'm like, yes, you can have women who defy the norms. That happens. But it takes it too much out of history when all of a sudden it's like everybody in her life is like, yeah, that works. And I'm like, no. Not how it works. Like, she legally could not own property.
Right, right. And it's
like there were legal things that were not possible because of the rules.
And it's funny too, because like when she, there's that scene where she wears pants and everyone's yes. like, whoa, what do you think you're doing? Yes. How dare you wear a pair of pants? You know, the reaction that she gets from them. And like,
well,
she,
and it was a, it's a riding habit, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. It's not so even like regular. It
was pants that were acceptable for women.
But not but for like every day.
Not while she's riding, because she's like, I'm not like, this is all defiance I can do.
Yeah, it's what I can do. But she, you know, I mean, she dresses as a boy to go to her uncle's lecture. Yes. She's like, I hope nobody catches me or I'm going to be in really big trouble because I'm really not supposed to be here. Yes. You know, and she doesn't want to get her uncle in trouble too. But she's like, she always says like, but I can't resist it. Like the call of this is just too much for me. I have to be here. I have to do this.
And there's another exciting character in class.
Yes, there is. He is very exciting, which is really fun. We'll get,
and he's handsome.
He is very handsome. I love, actually, the quote that's at the opening of this episode is about him. And when she first meets him and she's like, darn it, I wish he wasn't so handsome.
Yes.
Darn him and his good looks. Stop it. You're distracting me.
Yes. You know, like. And that's one of my favorite parts about like his character and how like their relationship with each other and just their give and take between each other is like, it's very real. And she's very like, I kind of hate you.
Kind of hate you, but
I don't know how to feel about you right now.
It is great. I absolutely love it. Oh, so much, so much to talk about. And I really want to talk about that more now. So I feel ready to go into some spoilers here.
I have nothing but spoilers left. So
awesome. Me too. So, all right. For everybody listening, if you have not yet read Stalking Jack the Ripper and you do not want it spoiled, then you should probably stop listening here, come back and listen to the rest of the episode after you have read the book. But if you have already read the whole book, or if you really just don't care about spoilers, then by all means, please keep listening. All right. You have been warned. So I do want to start with Audrey Rose and Thomas because we're there and I just love their relationship. It's like you said, it's just so much fun because she is like, I hate you, but you're super hot, but I hate you, but I can't think about you like that. But darn it, I'm falling in love with you at the same time.
And even though you're never like in his head, right? The entire book is from one point of view. You're never in his head, but you kind of get the impression that he's going through the same thing.
Right.
Where he's like, I really like you, but you drive me up the wall.
Yes. This is so funny. She says, one fact was slowly taking shape. I was in jeopardy of admiring Mr. Cresswell against my better judgment.
Yes.
So she's like, I know. I shouldn't do this, but I, darn it, he is just going to get under my skin and I know it, you know, like,
yes. And I also really like that he like lets her be herself.
Yes.
Like there are times when she like wants to go, you know, follow people that she suspects of being Jack the Ripper in the dark of the night while there's a serial killer on the loose. And he's like, okay, let's go.
But what's great about that too, is that he goes with her, like he's her protector, you know?
And I mean, the first time she goes by herself and you're reading it and you're like, Audrey Rose,
stupid girl,
die, because Jack the Ripper kills people.
Right. Yeah. They just have a great relationship too. And I love how much he flirts with her, like shamelessly flirts with her.
Shamelessly flirts with her.
He, okay, this is one of my favorite ones. He says, and just know ahead, you guys, I marked a lot of pages with quotes from this book. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. This one was just full of really good ones. So he, it says, without lifting his head from his own journal, he said, not having any luck figuring me out then? Don't worry, you'll get better with practice. And yes, he grinned wickedly, eyes fixed on his paper. You'll still fancy me tomorrow, no matter how much you wish otherwise. I'm unpredictable and you adore it. Just as I cannot wrap my massive brain around the equation of you and yet adore it. He's just, oh my gosh, I just love it. He is so flirtatious and so fun with her. And it's one of those like, he knows what he does to her and he takes full advantage of that. He's,
yes.
Because he's just like, I know how I make you feel. You won't admit it, but I know.
He was a very well-written and complicated character though, because I did not want to trust him the whole time.
Yes.
Which I mean, we know from the, like the blurb on the back of the book, the girl who loved the Ripper. And so you're like, okay, it's someone she's in love with, which like narrows it down to like her uncle, her father, her brother, Thomas, you know, like.
There's only so many people who it could be.
Because her father has kept her so isolated.
Right.
Topic for a different time.
Yes.
But so like, you don't know if you're allowed to like Thomas or if you're allowed to trust Thomas. And his behavior is just enough that you're like, is he that guy who's like the Ted Bundy, really attractive, charismatic serial killer? Like, maybe he's that guy.
But you don't want him to be that guy. Like,
no,
the whole
you don't
time...
want him to be that guy.
No, because he's just, he's so fun and he's so great and he's... the flirty, funny guy who gets under your skin, but you know you have feelings for him at the same time. And but he's just like, I kept on reading it and going, please don't be Thomas. Please don't be Thomas. Please don't be Thomas. Like, I desperately did not want Jack the Ripper to be Thomas. So I was very happy at the end when it was not Thomas.
Yes.
I was like, oh, thank the Lord. I'm glad it's not you.
I sort of had an inkling that it was not Thomas.
Yeah.
I've seen blurbs about the following books.
Okay. I wasn't going to admit it, but since you said that, I did the same thing. Cause
yeah, I was like, okay.
I got desperate at one point and I was like, I cannot take this anymore. And I just, well, I actually just wanted to kind of see too, like what the next book was about. And I, when I looked, I was like, all right, good. It's not going to be him because he's in the next book. So,
well, I did not realize until fairly late in the publishing series of these books that they were not like four standalones that just took, you know, like first thought it. I thought it was like Audrey Rose and Thomas, and then we were going to meet someone like her cousin who was the main character in the second book, you know?
Right.
Like they were the same kind of stories. Dealt with the same group of people. I did not realize that like the other books are also Audrey Rose.
Yeah.
And so when I read the spoiler, when I read about the second book, it was because I was not expecting to find out that it was Audrey Rose and Thomas in the next book. I didn't even know if Audrey Rose might die.
Well, let me tell you, there were a few points during the story where that was very likely to happen.
Yes. The first time she goes out completely by herself and doesn't tell anybody. I mean, if you read like Victorian or Regency fiction, you know, they talk all the time about how women aren't allowed to be out by themselves in London, right? In broad daylight. We're in Bath and all these places. It sounds at first like these deeply archaic rules. But when you learn more about the time period, you find out that it was horrifyingly unsafe.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm like, if London is not safe for people to walk around in broad daylight.
Well, and it's
problems on your hand as a society.
Seriously. Well, and watching the show Ripper Street, that's very clear, you know, because the lead character, okay, I'm going to say this. If you, it's going to be a spoiler for Ripper Street. I'm just putting that out there now. So if you haven't watched the show and you think you might skip ahead a couple minutes. So in Ripper Street, the lead character has a daughter. She's missing for a while and then comes back late in many of seasons at the end. But so he like doesn't want to let her out by herself. I mean, there's other reasons for that, but it's also because of what happens. Like they show all throughout the whole, like all the series from episode one, you know, like how bad it is in parts of London. And they're always talking about women shouldn't be walking out here alone by themselves at night. And even during the day, don't go to that part of town because it's really bad. And I'm thinking like, why are people living there? What is happening? Don't go more than like a 2 mile radius outside of your house. Like it's not safe in London.
Yes.
Okay. But
so speaking of not being allowed to go out, you want to talk a little bit about her relationship with her dad?
Yes. But before we do that, I just have one more thought about Audrey Rose and Thomas.
Audrey Rose and Thomas.
Part of what also made this relationship really fun for me was that they were like Sherlock Holmes and Watson. Like it was like Audrey Rose is Sherlock and Thomas is Watson. Even just the way that they talked to each other and some of the things that they did, I was like, it is Sherlock and Watson. I feel like I'm watching an episode of Sherlock right now, BBC with Benedict Cumberbatch. I was like, this is great. It's like watching Benedict Cumberbatch and Martin Freeman. But, you know, Audrey Rose and Thomas, it was just, that made it a lot more fun for me. At least like to me, that's how it read. And I really enjoyed that a lot.
One of my favorite like things when characters have a relationship is like two characters that get to be smart and brilliant together.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one thing I really liked about Audrey Rose and Thomas is you get to like, she gets to be smart and brilliant and notice things. And he is also smart and brilliant and notices things.
Yes.
Get to work together as a team. And I really, really liked that like partnership that they had.
Me and too. I'm
excited as I, you know, like hopefully get to read the rest of the books to see that and to see where that goes.
Especially now that they're also like in a relationship kind of at the end of this. I mean, kind of, it's a weird,
I mean,
thing.
As much of a relationship as you can be in Victoria, England, when you're not allowed to touch each other.
Right. It's kind of weird, but it's there, you know, but it's, yeah. So it is very interesting. It's fun watching them put the puzzle together, you know, like together, watching them discover little clues here and there together, like their brains are working together. And one of them will be like, well, this and this happened. Oh, so with this and yes. And the other one and yes. And then this happened and then, oh, we've got it. You know, like it's just, it's really fun watching their dynamic together. It's such a great pair to read.
And then in the end, they didn't get it.
No, I know. You're like, oh, I have to say, this is something else that I really loved that Carrie Maniscalco did here with this
Maniscalco
book. I'm guessing, but I think that's it. I love that she gave us a Jack the Ripper. She didn't leave it mysterious, like what actually happened, how nobody in the world actually really knows who Jack the Ripper was. She gives us Jack the Ripper.
She also keeps us unknown and guessing. Like, you're like, okay, it's one of these people and you don't really know. And then slowly, but systematically, she like erases this one as a possibility and erases this one, this one. And then you're like down to two. And it's like until the moment when you're like, yep.
Yep, exactly. And then, so after when I finished it, as I was ending it and I was realizing, okay, this is who Jack the Ripper is, I went back and was looking at some of the pages that I marked and I was like, oh my gosh. And I thought, wait a minute, didn't he say something like this? And so, like, I actually have a whole list of, there are clues. She gives clues throughout the book. You just don't put them all together until the, I mean, like you're supposed to, she's a good author. Yeah. So she did that way, but she did put little clues in there. Like after I read it, I went back and I was like, gosh, darn it all. She was telling us who it was the whole time. She gave us.
Yes.
Clues,
which I had sort of guessed who it really was. I was like, I feel like this is who it is fairly early on, but I doubted myself quite often throughout the book. But anyway.
Yeah. We can talk about her dad.
So her dad is so interesting to me. So her dad is someone who's basically tortured by the fact that his wife died. Rose's mother, Audrey Rose, and her brother's mother died. And he's just tortured by that fact. And he is terrified of the outside world. And oddly enough, he's not actually terrified that Audrey Rose is going to be killed by a serial killer. He's afraid she's sick.
Right.
And ill. And so he like never wants her to leave the house. And when she leaves the house, makes her wear a mask, which I also like enjoyed reading that in 2020, 2021. I was like, oh, look, England knew that masks worked.
That's exactly what I was thinking too. I could not have read this. We could not have read this book at a more appropriate time. It was so funny. Like I remember reading that the first time that pops up in the book and he wants her to wear a mask and I busted up laughing. I was like,
Yes. Which, I mean, London was a horrifically dirty city.
Mm-hmm.
It was gross. Have you ever heard about the London killer fog?
I don't think so.
So there was a period of time, and it's way more recently than you expect. I'm going to tell you this story, and you're going to expect it to have been in the 1820s.
Okay.
So there was a period of time when London had this deep cold snap, and so everyone was having to burn a lot of coal in like their ovens to keep their houses warm, similar to the mid, you know, to from Texas to North Dakota right now.
Yep.
But they, in the poorer parts of the city where everybody had bought really cheap coal, the emissions turned the fog acidic. And so the fog was deadly. Like literally the air was acidic and you couldn't breathe it.
Was this, I feel like this was on an episode of The Crown. So
it was in 1952. So it probably,
yeah, it was like, okay.
You're like, how does that happen in modern day? Right. But
yeah.
So like, and that's just a picture of how dirty London has been historically as a city.
Yeah.
Because it's not like it was any cleaner.
No. Well, and the thing is too, people have known that masks work for a long time also because if you think about like the plague doctors, this is where a lot of those like steampunk like masks with the long pointy noses come from, because when the plague, those doctors would wear those. They would wear those masks to protect themselves.
Yes.
So
London also had a population of somewhere between 1 and 5 million people. So like in 1800, the population of London was 1 million.
Mm-hmm.
By 1900, the population was 6.7 million. So it was
crazy.
Huge, like, it was just a very heavily populated city.
Yeah.
There were a lot of people. And so her dad was probably not wrong.
No, I'm sure he wasn't wrong. It was just... it's just funny because he's worried about her getting sick and not killed by Jack the Ripper.
Yes.
But he also like is so very against her spending time with her uncle.
Yes.
Well, because
you find out that it was because her uncle like tried to save her mother and couldn't.
Right. So he's mad at the uncle or doesn't want her to be with the uncle for that reason and doesn't want her to end up like the uncle.
It was a very interesting picture of how grief like people and changes people, which you find out her dad has a substance abuse problem.
Right. And we definitely get more on the how grief affects people when, you know, we get to her brother being Jack the Ripper and what he's doing down there in that hidden dark basement lair. So, yeah, I mean, grief really does strange things to people, you know?
It does.
In a serious note there. It does do strange things.
Well, and her uncle is a very interesting character as well. And her uncle actually gets arrested.
Right.
because the Scotland Yard is like, we need them to think that we're capturing some people. So they arrested everybody who might have anything to do with it. Basically, they like threw darts at a wall to see what would stick. And then if they knew they had one of the six people.
Right. And because he was seen as weird, he got arrested. Well, also he was set up. So that's the other reason he got arrested.
Yes. He also like had the skill set, because that's been a very common thing that Jack the Ripper has, you know, known.
Right.
He obviously had some kind of medical skill set, but not her uncle.
Nope. I did love her uncle though. And one reason that I loved him too was because he supported her so much, and he was encouraging her. Like, he wasn't like, no, get out of here. You know, you're a girl. You shouldn't be doing this stuff. He encouraged her and was teaching her how to do everything. And he was teaching Thomas too, which is how they kind of met that way the first time in her uncle's lab or basement. but then met again when she went to her uncle's class.
Yes.
But yeah, so I love that he encouraged her and, you know, was like, yeah.
See, I felt like he was quite abrasive. And almost felt like he more wanted Audrey Rose there to have an assistant when he needed one.
Yeah. And
he wanted her to like grow out of it at some point. Like, in the name of science, I need an extra set of hands, and Thomas can't be my only set of hands because I have to send him out places. And so you get to be here to help me because I need you. He just struck me as a very selfish person.
He does come across like that too. You're right.
And so I found him to be abrasive and selfish. And I did not appreciate that he had like tried a heart transplant to save her mother when he knew the science was so bad, which yes, he was pressured by Audrey Rose's father. But I was like, you never should have attempted it.
No. And I agree with you 100% on there. I mean, you know, a heart transplant when you don't know anything about it on your sister-in-law. Like,
that's already had a weak heart and had been sick.
Right. I mean, that's a really big deal. So yes. You got to be really careful there with that kind of thing. And he just wasn't. Which is what causes the issue.
Yeah. That is one aspect of the book that I did not love, is that I kind of felt like there was a part, it was probably about between 60 and 80% of the way through, where I didn't feel like I understood anything that was going on.
Okay.
Like, when she finds out that her uncle had actually attempted the heart transplant and hadn't just medically tried to save her with medicine, and when you find out that Thomas's mother also died and also had a gallbladder transplant, and like, you find out all of these things in history all at one time. And I was like, I don't understand how like any of this fits together. You eventually, like, once I got like 80% way through, I either saw how it fit together or it didn't matter. And right. So I was able to just move on. But there were periods of time where I was like, wait a minute, that does not make any sense. But okay.
Yeah, no, I agree with you completely. Because there were times when I thought the same thing. I was like, is this a piece of information I need to remember for later? Is this going to be relevant? Or is this one of those?
For example, Thomas is buying the unclaimed bodies.
Right.
To do his own experiments. And she's like, okay, you're doing your own research. And then her brother's like, well, his mother died and had a gallbladder transplant that uncle did that da 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 da. And you're like, but wait. And then you find out that one of the bodies he bought wasn't really unclaimed. And I was like, what is the point of any of that?
I didn't Well, I think part of that was supposed to make Thomas look suspicious.
Yes, because it does, because one of the women who Jack the Ripper killed was missing a gallbladder.
Right. So that,
but I just felt like I got a lot of extraneous information all at once.
Agreed. No, I agree.
I didn't understand where it all came from, which to me, is one of the pitfalls of a present tense first person.
Mm-hmm.
Because we learned about it with Audrey Rose.
Right.
And unless we were going to get it all in one big information dump conversation,
mm-hmm.
only got like the bare bones details of what was going on.
Right.
It was also, you know, a red herring being planted by Jack the Ripper to her.
Yes, that's true.
I kind of felt similarly about the guy that worked at Scotland Yard.
Yeah.
That you like randomly find out her dad gave permission to court her.
Yeah.
And it's like, she's like, wait a minute. And she's mad at him and you never see him again.
Like, I know. I was like, well, what? It was just kind of funny though. Like it was kind of a good, like,
yes,
comic relief well, type
like,
moment.
I mean, you meet, yeah. Like you meet this guy and he's being nice and he's like, hey, come help me on the case. And you're like, right. Ooh, this is Jack the Ripper. Maybe this guy could be her love interest. Very yeah. interesting. And then all of a sudden her dad like storms down to the scene and is like, I didn't give you permission to court her so that you could bring her to a murder scene.
And you're like, wait a minute.
And she's like, what?
Because she had no clue. It was a good shock factor moment too.
But it yeah, also then struck me very like awkward guy trying to like woo the woman. And he's like, hey, she likes dead bodies. I'll invite her to the murder scene.
That was really good. How am I going to win her over? Ooh, she can come to the murder scene with me. This yes, is great. Let's
show her a flayed body. She'll like yes. me then.
Which, by the way, I feel like was another clue from the author, that scene, because her brother is there. And as we all know from every TV crime drama show, the perpetrator, the guilty person, often shows up at the scene of the crime at some point.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but her father is also there.
Right.
So when the medium is like, you got yelled at by the killer, she's like, there were like four men there that were all mad at me and yelling at me about stuff.
Right. But your head kind of, at least mine did, my head immediately went to her dad and then her brother. So I was like, yeah. It's got to be one of them. And then, you know, Carrie kind of points us towards her dad, but I was like, no, that's way too obvious now. You know,
mm-hmm. when that what, I had already kind of gotten an inkling that it was her brother at that point.
Yeah.
And so I was like, I think it's her brother, but it could be her dad.
Yeah, it's one of those like, okay, so I just finished watching Bridgerton and I had an inkling on who Lady Whistledown was, but then they make you think in the very last episode that it's somebody else. And then at the very end, I found out, no, it was the person who I thought it was. So it's kind yes. of the same. Yeah, it's the same. And, you know, authors, writers, they like to do this kind of thing to you. But I just, it was almost like, it's like, no, that's too obvious. The way that it was very conveniently piling up on Daddy was just,
yes.
it was just too much, you know?
I didn't want it to be Nathaniel.
I know. Because he, like, let's talk about this. Because he plays yes. like such the good role of protective brother, you know? Like, and he just,
who's under stress because his dad is an opiate addict and has to be, like, sent away so that he doesn't embarrass the family. Mm-hmm. And he's that's walking around town in pants in the middle of some dude. And uncle has been arrested. And, like, the family is in chaos. And yeah. you feel for him being so stressed.
Right? Oh. It's no Nathaniel. Wonder he snapped. And then she finally figures out, and then we go downstairs to his basement laboratory, and you're like, holy cow, he is crazy.
You find mind. Out that he is like Dr. Frankensteining his mother.
Yes.
With pieces that he cuts out of all of these women
mm-hmm.
and bring her back to life again.
Which, okay, side note, just because I have to. People often think, like people who haven't necessarily read the book or seen any movie adaptations or whatever, think that Frankenstein is the monster. the name of the monster, but it's not. That is the doctor. Yep. That is the doctor. Thank you, Benedict Cumberbatch. And what's his name for that enchanting version of the play from London that I saw anyway. But yeah, people think that Frankenstein was the name of the monster, but it wasn't, is the doctor. But yes. Yeah, I mean, that was exactly, she walks down there and sees all that stuff. And I was like, holy crap, he is Dr. Frankenstein. And I'm picturing this. And again, because I had watched recently, I had watched the play Frankenstein from London, and it had Benedict Cumberbatch was in it and Johnny Lee Miller. I was trying to think of his name. Johnny Lee Miller. Each of them.
Both of them?
They
both. Yeah. That's like Sherlock.
I know. Well, and here's the thing about this. And I promise you people, everybody listening, this is relevant. Okay. This is relevant. It's a relevant tangent. So Johnny Lee Miller and Benedict Cumberbatch both learned both parts. They both played both parts. So there were some performances where Benedict Cumberbatch was the creature and Johnny Lee Miller was Dr. Frankenstein. And then there were some performances where they switched. And so I think it was put into theaters, like as a Fathom Events, one of those things where they do like the special movies or whatever. And then PBS, I think it was either PBS broadcast it or the Playhouse in London put it up for viewing, like on YouTube for like a weekend or something. So I was able to watch both of them, you know, each of their interpretations, which is fantastic. But when they put the creature together and the creature comes to life, like it's crazy to see, like, because the creature he's got like stitching and stuff all over him. He looks very rough around the edges. And then Dr. Frankenstein makes a bride for the creature and she looks the same. And so I had these like very vivid images of the creature in my mind as I'm reading this. And like, this is what I'm seeing as we are getting the description of Nathaniel and Audrey Rosa's poor mother on the table in pieces. And he's just trying to stitch them back together.
Yeah. This is where like Harry's extremely great descriptiveness was horrifying.
Yes.
Because you really get it. And it was like, I also really loved the moment where Audrey Rose is like, Nathaniel, you can't do this. And there's a tiny part of her that's like, but what if it would work and bring mother back to us? Like,
yes,
this idea that grief can do that to you, where you're like, but what if they could be alive?
Right. And that's what's driving him. That's what's driving Nathaniel, because he sees what the grief has done to his father, you know, and how his father sees
what the grief did to Audrey Rose as well.
Right. And he's grieving. And so this is what he said was that I love to, early in the book, there is a reference to Frankenstein because she's, and this is what I was talking about before, where the author kind of put these like subtle little clues in along the way. Cause she says, where is it? The curved scythe-like blade of the amputation knife, the bone saws, and the imposing glass and metal syringes wouldn't be out of place in a Gothic novel, such as both Nathaniel and Maya's childhood favorite, Frankenstein. So she puts that in there, and then lo and behold, there's Frankenstein's creature in the basement of their house.
It is horrifying.
Mm-hmm. It really is.
It all plays out. And then Nathaniel, like, dies.
I know.
And which I'm kind of glad that she didn't try and redeem him.
Yeah.
Because it would have been disingenuous to me to the reality of Jack the Ripper.
Right, right.
And the horrifying, like, what actually happened. I'm like, no,
So as much as like in those final moments before he dies, I was so torn because I was like, I know that there's not going to be a good ending for Nathaniel, no matter what, because this is the late 1800s. And based on the show that I watched, again, this is great. I base things off of TV, not actual reality. No, but I know that it was based off of true things. But you know, like he would have been hung or something, like he would have been killed anyway. So it's kind of like, well, there's no way that this is going to end for him except death. But there was still this tiny part of me that was like, please don't kill Nathaniel. Please don't kill Nathaniel. Cause he was such a good brother to her and so devoted. And I loved seeing that relationship, you know, and it's sad cause you don't want him to die. And you're just like, he's just crazy grief stricken right now. But you know, at the same time, I knew it had to happen. So but rather at their hands and dying that way than, you know, being hung on a gallows somewhere. So
for sure.
Yeah. I do like too at the end that Audrey Rose and her dad, you know, kind of come to grips with thing and come to a good understanding.
So I had a hard time because she makes the statement at one point, I've seen too many horrific things. I just can't do this anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And then her dad is like, I'm going to send you to a forensic school.
Yeah.
And she's like, okay. And it'll be interesting to see if that comes into play in the next one.
Yeah.
Like if this like indecision that she has with if what she had always wanted for her entire life is what she really wanted.
Right.
Because what happened with Nathaniel could change her trajectory completely, or it could enforce what she like always wanted.
Right. It's funny that you bring this up because I actually had just opened up to that exact page where this happens. Because she says Nathaniel involved himself in science and ended up buried. Perhaps it was a sign that I needed to give it up as well. Because she's tired of fighting both society and life. Giving in felt weak, but the gaping hole in my chest swallowed any burning desire to carve my own path. So I feel like it was like, because of Nathaniel, because of what happened to him, you know, she's like, I don't know if I should do this anymore because look what happened to him. So is it maybe, does she have this tiny little bit of fear in her? Like, oh gosh, is that going to happen to me too? You know?
Yes.
But then daddy's like, oh, I'm going to send you to a forensic school and oh, Thomas is going with you. Oh, well then it'll be fine because she's really getting to like officially learn and go to school and maybe doing it in the correct way will help her. And then having Thomas there with her will be like, okay, so he can kind of keep me in line, you know? Yeah.
And although she wants you know to go what to school. You don't do if you're a dad, 18-year-olds to school together.
I did think that was kind of fun. I was like, so, especially in this time period. Like,
yeah. So she's not allowed to walk around London by herself, but you're going to send her on a train trip to another country with her boyfriend.
Yeah. Great thinking, dad, where they're going to live on their own, you know? Yeah. So
that's going to end well.
Right. Are we going to see a baby in one of these books?
Maybe.
Although I will say this though. There are quite a few instances where her and Thomas are alone in a dark alleyway or whatever, like when they were waiting for the bodies and they're so close and they do kiss a couple of times. And it's just like, but she has that argument with herself. Like we were talking about like, oh, but society says I'm not supposed to do this. And so, you know, so I'm not sure I really see Audrey Rose giving into this too much. So her father is probably knowing that. I don't know, you know. But
it was just, it was a really funny moment. Though. I was like, so you're okay with him? So of course I'm going to send my daughter across the country with him.
Right? Why not? Oh my gosh. All the things. All right. Did you have any other thoughts? Any other final thoughts? Anything we missed? Didn't hit yet?
No.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I just absolutely loved this book, Raging Endorsement, right here. And I am excited to read the other ones too. What I like about this is that I feel like with the series, that this book came to its own like really good conclusion and ending. So I have been able to take a break and read other things because I don't feel like I have to jump right onto the next one in order to keep the story going, because the next one follows a different historical character who she stalks or gets involved. I don't even know who the next one is off the top of my head.
I read the blurb in the back. That's like the first chapter.
What's the next one?
The next one
Dracula.
Is,
the next one's Dracula, which I am wanting to read because that's another one of my like fascinations.
Prince Dracula.
Oh, that's going to be good too.
Yes. So
I just like that. I like that it's a series that I can put down for a little bit if I want to and come back to it and not feel like, oh my gosh, this is killing me because I can't read the next book right away type of thing. Because especially because right now things at my library are very slow. Now I own Jack the Ripper, so I would probably maybe buy the other ones, but I am trying to save some money. Can't buy every book.
Well, I've never had to do this before, but when Sarah and I were recording, right at the end, of course, my internet went out and we tried again to get the ending, but I completely lost the recording. It just didn't want to cooperate with me that day. So I am just here to wrap up. Sarah and I both really enjoyed this book, Stalking Jack the Ripper by Carrie Maniscalco. And I hope that you enjoyed this episode. Thanks again for listening, and we will chat again soon. Today's episode featured the book Stalking Jack the Ripper by Carrie Maniscalco. Be sure to follow YA Book Chat on Instagram, and don't forget to subscribe so you get your podcast episodes as soon as they are available. And have you checked out the YA Book Chat Patreon? There are lots of benefits that you won't want to miss out on. Just click the link in the show notes for today to find out more information. YA Book Chat was created, hosted, and edited by me, Leah Stuhler.